Good morning and welcome to the International Connection once again on Sunday. This is a continuation of a radio series on mind control that we're bringing you. We heard for the last 5 weeks a lecture and interview by Dr. Colin Ross detailing the history of CIA's mind control experimental programs that have been documented by documents obtained by the Freedom of Information Act. What we're going to hear today is the mind control testimony that was introduced into the Presidential Advisory Committee on Human Radiation Experiments in March 15th of 1995. President Clinton has apologized and compensated some of the victims of the radiation experiments. At the end of the hearing, however, Valerie Wolf, Claudia Mullen, and Christy Nicola gave their testimony about mind control experiments and linked in with the radiation experiments. We're going to hear that testimony that was given to the advisory committee in the second half of the show. In the first half, we're going to hear Claudia Mullen talk about the experience of giving testimony at the presidential hearings. Claudia is a survivor of CIA mind control experimentation for many years and got introduced to this through the Tulane University, which we heard Colin Ross talk about Tulane's involvement in the mind control programs in the previous weeks here. It's extremely brave of these women to have come forward, and they really, in effect, had broke the silence for many survivors. You're listening to 88.1 CKLN.
But when she leaves the room, her life is never the same again, because she's been asked to give testimony in front of a presidential committee on radiation. And that's pretty much what I wanted to tell you all was what the experience was like. And I have some clips from the testimony and to show you, and then I don't know if y'all got handouts, but they're not complete. But anyhow, what are we doing on time? Oh, okay. Well, anyhow, she walks in the room, and there's obviously a lot of important people there, but there's also just a lot of everyday people, people of all ages. The only people that are missing are children. There aren't any children there, but it's a good thing, because the stories that she hears, people that get up ahead of her tell their stories, they're pretty heart-wrenching, and she forgets to be nervous for a while because they just move her so much. But then finally she hears her name, and she realizes, oh, I have to give testimony. So she goes up and she gives her testimony, and they ask her questions. And when she leaves the room, all of a sudden everybody knows her name now. And people just start swarming all over her and telling her how brave she is, and she feels scared to death, and she can't figure out why everybody thinks that she's so brave. But she got up and told her story about the monster mom and about the magister and about the camp and about the cabins at Deep Creek Lodge place. Told them everything. And I forgot to tell you how she remembered. Because remember I said that I always forgot everything. As soon as I got home, I would forget what had happened. And that went on. When I went away to college, I still had no memory of it, you know. And then in October of 92, something happened to me completely unrelated. Had nothing to do with any of this. Just another crime that, you know, in a city that has a lot of crime, actually. But a man comes into her home, a man that she knows, and he assaults her, he rapes her. And he keeps her for hours, and he beats her. And it becomes, she thinks it's the worst thing that's ever happened to her, but somehow it's really familiar feeling. And after that day, all of a sudden she starts getting all these horrible nightmares and memories and flashbacks, and she didn't even know what a flashback was, but flashbacks start coming, and it pretty much triggered all the memories that started coming back. And so by the time she goes to Washington, she's only about halfway through doing the memories. So it's really kind of hard when she gets up to talk about it, because she has to control, you know, not to go into a flashback when she's talking about it. But it works out okay. And after that, I have to say life was never the same again. From then on, there was no going back. Once I did it, I had to stay. I had to keep talking, because if you stop talking, that's when they get you. Because there are a lot of, to be honest, there's a lot of good things in there. There's some bad parts about testifying. The good part is that she got to tell her story. People believed her. She was asked to tell her story. And because when the memories started coming back and she went into treatment, into therapy, the imaginary friends, they woke up after all these years. They woke up again, and they came out, and they would start writing furiously, I mean pages, until it came, well, into a book about this big. And all of her memories, all the people, all the places that she went, what the people's titles were, who they worked for, how much money they got, anything that they talked about, whole conversations. And she sent off the information to various experts across the country who tried to verify as much as they could. And lo and behold, there was a lot of stuff in there that wasn't written down anywhere, that hadn't been released yet, but they think that is in the CIA files. But so it's good that she gets to get up and tell her story. And every time she tells a story, it's a little more healing. It's therapeutic. But it also gives other people a chance to tell their story, because it kind of starts something going. And ever since that day, people have started to talk about what happened. And she's met so many other children that are now grown up, and they're starting to remember. And she knows she's not alone anymore. Because all those years, even though she didn't remember a lot, she felt really alone. And she thought special meant alone or odd. And I guess you could say the bad part is that, like I said, once you testify, it becomes public record. And the good part is that you can't be sued, because no matter what you know, as long as you're telling the truth, and that's what I did, you're making accusations against people, but they can't sue you because you're testifying, and it's the truth. And from then on, you can talk about the same people as much as you want, and they can't ever sue you. So that's one thing I never had to worry about, is being sued. But I've been threatened and harassed and assaulted since it happened, and I wouldn't be telling the truth if I said everything had been just great since then, because there have been some bad times. But had I to do it all over again, knowing what would have happened, I wouldn't change a thing. I'd still do it. I'd do it in a second. Only I would do it after I finished doing my memories, after I got all my memories back. That's the only thing that I would change. And let's see. Is there anything else? Huh?
They wouldn't postpone the hearing,
No. I tried to get them to, but they wouldn't. And another reason that it would have been better if I had recalled all my memories before I testified is because what I didn't realize was they used a lot of time distortion, along with the drugs and the electricity and the trauma. They used hypnosis, and it distorts, they could distort time. And so, and it also, somehow it gets you to confuse people, because they thought, well, if there's a slight chance that she's going to remember, at least she'll get up things all confused. Plus, they throw in a few things like ceremonies and things like that, just to, so you'll sound really crazy if you ever start to remember. And so my testimony would have been a little more accurate as far as, the, you know, there's a few distortions in there, a few, like mixing people's names with the wrong face. But once I got all my memories, then I remembered, you know, exactly. And then, but I can't change testimony. Once it's given, it's given. So I thought maybe you all would like to see a little clip from it. I didn't bring my testimony because, as you can probably imagine, I don't like to see myself on film. I don't mind having my picture taken, but I really can't stand to watch myself on film. And I guess you know why. So I mainly just wanted to kind of give you an idea of what it looks like. And because hopefully in the near future there'll be a commission for victims of mind control. This was focused on radiation. And we were allowed to testify because, and there were three of us, well, actually four of us that were victims of mind control, but they use radiation. And I was, I guess you could say, one of the lucky ones because they didn't use a lot of radiation with me. And they took a lot of x-rays because I got hurt a lot, but with some mind control victims, they use a lot of radiation. And that's how we got to testify in front of a radiation commission. But hopefully, that's what we're trying to do. It's, that's what the whole movement is about. But, you know, what we got started is we're trying to get a committee on our to investigate the files of the CIA that have to do with mind control. And so I showed a little bit of just what it was like and then the questions that they ask you, because that's what you have to be prepared for. They only gave us like 2.5 weeks to prepare. And we had 2.5 weeks before we found out that we're going to go. And I went with my therapist and one other girl from New Orleans. And then another person came from New Mexico and testified. And then there were six other people, but they were testifying about strictly radiation. And we were able to submit as much material as we wanted ahead of time. But you could only talk for, they told you 5 minutes, but actually they gave us a little longer. But we were told that we had to put everything down and say it within 5 minutes, and then leave time for questions, because they did ask you questions. And the reason I left the questions in is because that was the tough part, the questions. I mean, it's not that they were hard to answer, it was just kind of being on the spot, you know, and not knowing exactly what they were going to ask you. So this will give you a good idea of what kind of things they might ask, what it would be like. Let's see. And then in the handouts, I just wanted to mention, the reason I didn't read or tell you what was in my testimony is because I think it's in here. I put in a little bit about the advisory committee. Then that's the agenda for the day that we were testifying. And see, we're down number 8. And then a memorandum from the vice president about the research. Then my therapist, who talked before I did, and showed how there was a link between mind control and radiation, and how the memories had started to come back, and all the therapists that she had talked to across the country, their clients were saying the same thing. I mean, not exactly the same thing, but it was so similar that it was uncanny. And then this is my statement, and that's what. But I actually submitted a lot more material than that, names and places and dates, everything that I could remember. And then what else is in here? This is in October. They finally got the final report of the advisory committee, and this is what. There's two pages, and it was actually nobody even called us and told us that they came out with any recommendations. But I saw it on the internet. Somebody sent it to me by email. And you got to remember that these committees last for like a year. They meet once a month in different parts of the country so that they can take, you know, public speakers can come talk, and they reach every area of the country. But this had been going on. We were at the very end of it, and it had been going on since, I don't know, April of 94. And then, so this is what the recommendations were, and they did listen to us, like I said, because they recommended that all records of the CIA bearing on programs of secret human research, such as MKUltra, well, you can read it, and that's all the names of the projects that I could remember. They recommended that they be declassified. So, but of course, that hasn't happened yet. And then there's some steps here to advocate for investigating, informing advocacy groups, like, and I put in Lynn and Blanche's group that they started, and this is kind of, and they could correct me if I'm wrong, but this because of the because we all, you know, kind of put our foot in the door and testify, they started AICS, the Advocacy Committee for Human Experimental Survivors. Okay, and also, if you all would like to read the testimony itself, and there's a book by John Rappaport called U.S. Government Mind Control Experiments on Children, They Want to Know, by John Rappaport. And in the back of the room, there's some flyers for how you can order that, order the book. The documentation, which the man kept asking us about, there is documentation. For one thing, my memories were considered, you know, documentation. All the people that I remembered, descriptions of places, people, project names, numbers, medical records, psychiatric records, or from my therapist, school records. We actually went back and verified that I did miss school at these times that I remembered. Actually, in grade school, I probably missed a third of every year, and yet I was never held back. I don't know why. When family records are considered documentation, you can go back and talk to relatives who remember that you were gone at this period of time. Also remember seeing you bruised or, you know, being treated at Tulane. My sister remembers that. Pictures from childhood. My mother kept a scrapbook, and she usually had like two scrapbooks a year. And yet, except for two Christmases, there's no Christmas pictures with me in it. There's my sister, my mother, and my father, and I'm not in any of them because I wasn't there. And birthday, there's pictures of my sister's birthdays, and none for me. Notes, cards, or anything from the perpetrators, and I actually did. I got a Christmas card from Uncle Otto. Remember Uncle Otto from Deep Creek Lodge? I don't know if he really wrote it or not. They might have just done that to make me feel like, you know, I don't know. Anyhow, I got a Christmas card from him, and the magistrate gave it to me and said Uncle Otto had sent it. He also gave me a doll, sent me a doll as a Christmas present, but they took it away from me. Any material like harassment material, which I got quite a bit of, and I probably will when I go home. I get it in the mail. I get it written on my house, so I have the police come every time that it's written on the house, my car, the fence. It's been written mostly in red paint, but sometimes blood, animal blood. So they're like threats, or, you know, just it's just harassment. And things like die, shut up, or whatever. And so every time that happens, I have to have the police come out and take pictures so it's, you know, documented that I'm getting it. And then I keep everything that I get in the mail. I have a caller ID and call tracer when I get phone calls. And sometimes I get phone calls and they'll say words that are supposed to trigger me and remind me of, things that happened, or call me Crystal, which was my name at Tulane. And also you can order your phone records. Every month, along with my bill, I get every phone call that comes into my house is written down where it's from. Military records, how the memories match the projects and the experiments, the similarity of stories between people. Also, it's a good idea, but don't ever do this alone, to go back to the sites if they're still there. And you'd be surprised, a lot of the buildings are still there. Of course, Tulane's still there, still going strong. But you go back there and take pictures of the places that you were in or went to. But you don't go alone. I went with my therapist because I was afraid of going into flashback. But you can use that. And of course, the CIA files, if we can get them declassified. And the fact that the information you can have validated, that there's information that you know that isn't written in any book or published anywhere. And there's just one more thing that, I don't know how much time, but, yeah, I'm going to have questions, but I just wanted to say, everybody has to decide for themselves if they want to start talking, but I think you can see how it's important, and it helps the process, the healing process. It puts you in touch with people that you never thought you'd meet, that you get to know people that went through the same thing you did, and that's validation for yourself, because that's just as important as, you know, is that, you have to decide if the good outweighs the bad, and I did, and like I said, I'd do it again in a minute. Yeah. Somebody once said, great spirits have always encountered violent opposition from mediocre minds. Great spirits have always encountered violent opposition from mediocre minds. Albert Einstein said that. I like that.
We've been listening to Claudia Mullen describe her giving testimony at the presidential hearings on radiation experiments in March 15th of 95. We are next going to hear that testimony, and you'll be hearing first Valerie Wolf, who is the therapist of Claudia and Chris. You'll be hearing Christy Nicola, and then Claudia Mullen giving their testimony. You're listening to CKLN 88.1.
People who have asked to present, and again, please forgive me if I'm not pronouncing people's names correctly, but we have Ms. Chris DiNicola, Ms. Valerie Wolf, and Ms. Claudia Mullen. Are you all of New Orleans?
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Thank you for making the effort to come up to speak to us today.
Okay, I'm going to start. My name is Valerie Wolf. In listening to the testimony today, it all sounds really familiar. I am here to talk about a possible link between radiation and mind control experimentation that began in the late 1940s. The main reason that mind control research is being mentioned is because people are alleging that they were exposed as children to mind control, radiation, drugs, and chemical experimentation, which were administered by the same doctors who are known to have been involved in conducting both radiation and mind control research. Written documentation has been provided revealing the names of people and the names of research projects in statements from people across the country. It is also important to understand that mind control techniques and follow-ups into adulthood may have been used to intimidate these particular research subjects into not talking about their victimization in government research. As a therapist for the past 22 years, I have specialized in treating victims and perpetrators of trauma and their families. When word got out that I was appearing at this hearing, nearly 40 therapists across the country, and I had about a week and a half to prepare, contacted me to talk about clients who had reported being subjects in radiation and mind control experiments. The consistency of people's stories about the purpose of the mind control and pain induction techniques such as electric shock, use of hallucinogens, sensory deprivation, hypnosis, dislocation of limbs, and sexual abuse is remarkable. There is almost nothing published on this aspect of mind control used with children, and these clients come from all over the country, having had no contact with each other. What was startling was that therapists reported many of these clients were also physically ill, with autoimmune problems, thyroid problems, multiple sclerosis, and other muscle and connective tissue diseases, as well as mysterious ailments for which a diagnosis cannot be found. While somatization disorder is commonly found in these clients, many of the clients who've been involved in the human experimentation with the government have multiple medically documented physical ailments. And I was really shocked today to hear one of the speakers talk about the cysts and the teeth breaking off, because I have a client that that's happening to. Many people are afraid to tell their doctors their histories as mind control subjects for fear of being considered to be crazy. These clients have named some of the same people, particularly a Dr. Green, who was associated with clients' reports of childhood induction of pain, mind control techniques, and childhood sexual abuse. One of my clients who had seen him with a name tag identified him as Dr. L. Wilson Green. A person with this same name was the scientific director of the chemical and radiological laboratories at the Army Chemical Center, and that he was engaged in doing research for the Army and other intelligence agencies. Other names that have come to light are Dr. Sidney Gottlieb and Dr. Martin Orne, who it is reported were also involved in radiation research. It needs to be made clear that people have remembered these names and events spontaneously, with free recall, and without the use of any memory retrieval techniques such as hypnosis. As much as possible, we have tried to verify the memories with family members, records, and experts in the field. Many attempts have been made through Freedom of Information Act filings to gain access to the mind control research documentation. These requests have generally been slowed down or denied, although some information has been obtained, which suggests that at least some of the information supplied by these clients is true. It is important that we obtain all of the information contained in the CIA and military files to verify or deny our clients' memories. Although many of the files for MK Ultra may have been destroyed, whatever is left, along with the files for other projects, such as Bluebird and Artichoke, to name only two, contain valuable information. Furthermore, if, as the evidence suggests, some of these people were used in radiation experiments, there might be information in the mind control experiment files on radiation experiments. We need this information to help in the rehabilitation and treatment of many people who have severe psychological and medical problems which interfere with their social, emotional, and financial well-being. Finally, I urge you to recommend an investigation into these matters. Although there was a commission on mind control, it did not include experiments on children, because most of them were too young or still involved in the research in the late 1970s to come forward. The only way to end the harassment and suffering of these people is to make public what has happened to them in the mind control experiments. Please recommend that there be an investigation and that the files be opened on the mind control experiments as they related to children. Thank you.